Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Josie Kluger. This week, Vayeshev. It's not too late for you to join us at the Winter Pardes Executive Seminar. It will be held here in Jerusalem from Monday, December 24th through Thursday, December 27th. You'll learn from Rabbi Schweiger and the other top teachers of Pardes. So please consider getting a low-cost ticket, a hotel room, and joining us here at Pardes. You'll have a great time. Please see our website for more information or call our office in New York or Jerusalem for all the details. Thank you. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Vayeshev. Rabbi Schweiger is a senior faculty member at Pardes and also serves as the Mashgiach Ruchani, the spiritual advisor for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
This week's parsha is Parshat Vayeshev. And today I would like to examine the story of Joseph in the house of Potiphar. Chapter 39. So let us begin with verse 1. We are told that Joseph was brought down to Egypt. Joseph was purchased by Potiphar, who is an officer in Pharaoh's court. Potiphar, who is described as an Egyptian man, he is purchased from the hands of the Ishmaelim who brought him there. As we have noted in other podcasts, very often geographical movements reflect existential changes. Joseph being brought down to Egypt is not just going from the land of Israel to the land of Egypt, but he is literally brought down from a position of status in his father's house. Joseph, who was given the coat, a symbol of royalty, Joseph, who had the dreams that the brothers themselves interpreted as foreshadowing his ruling over them, is now being brought down from the status of a leader, of a king, to the status of a slave. Nevertheless, he is not the slave of a slave, but he is the slave of a very significant individual, an officer in the house of Pharaoh. An Ish Mitzri, which implies a man of stature in Egypt. And then we were told how Joseph develops in this framework. In verse 2 it says, "And Hashem, God, is with Joseph, and he becomes a successful man, and he is in the house of his Egyptian master." Note the fact that when Joseph was in his father's house, it never mentions God. And never speaks about God being with Joseph. Only when Joseph comes down to the land of Egypt, all of a sudden, God is with him. To a certain extent, this reminds us of the story of Jacob. When Jacob is running away from his brother, God appears to him before he leaves the land of Israel in the beginning of Parshat Vayetse. And Jacob has a dream, and God says to him, "Don't worry, Jacob. I will be with you. I will protect you. I will guard you so that you will eventually come back to the land of Israel." Joseph, although he had dreams, did not have God speak to him. Yet nevertheless, God is with Joseph in the same way God was with Jacob in the house of Laban. And all of a sudden, Joseph now makes a very significant transition. In the beginning of our parsha, in the opening verses, Joseph is described as a 17-year-old who is a lad, v'hu na'ar. In this verse, he is described as an ish matzliach, a successful man. Joseph has gone from being an adolescent to being a man. Joseph is now coming into his own. He is successful. And God is playing an instrumental role in that process. And ironically, all this is happening in the house of his Egyptian master, a man in the house of a man. Once again, note the parallel between Joseph and Jacob. Jacob, too, becomes a man, becomes successful in the house of another man, Laban. And now we continued to describe the metamorphosis which Joseph is experiencing. In the subsequent verses, His master sees that God is with him, and that all that he does, God makes successful in his hands. And this is an issue that bothers the rabbis. How is it possible that Potiphar, an Egyptian, or in the language of the rabbis, an evil man, how is it possible that he sees God, that he has an understanding, recognition of God? Rashi summarizes what appears in rabbinic sources by saying, Shem Shamayim Shagur Befiv, the name of heaven was frequent in his mouth. How does Potiphar know that God is with him? Because Joseph says so. And in various midrashim, it says that Potiphar would see Joseph mumbling, and he would become very anxious because he was afraid that Joseph was engaged in sorcery. And he would ask him, what are you saying? And Joseph would tell him, I am praying to God. I am praying to God to help me be successful. I am thanking God when it is actualized. And because Joseph constantly speaks about God, that brings Potiphar to that awareness. Interestingly, we have again a kind of parallel to the story of Jacob and also to the story of Isaac. After Joseph is born and Jacob asks Laban, I'd like to go, Laban refuses, and Laban's response is, I have guessed that God is with you. Interestingly, Laban became extremely wealthy by the presence of Jacob in his home, as we will see in a moment, happens with Potiphar and Joseph. And there Laban intuits that it's because God is with him. And we have a similar thing that happens with Isaac, which we have also discussed in other podcasts. Isaac in the land of the Philistines, in chapter 26. He plants during a period of famine in a very arid area in the Negev desert. He produces 100-fold. But beyond that, he's extremely successful. And eventually, Avimelech, the king of Plishtim, comes and says to him, I have seen that Hashem is with you, that God is assisting you. Let us come back to our story. In the subsequent verses, we are told how Joseph finds favor in the eyes of his master, and ultimately, how his master appoints him to be in charge of everything in his house. Perhaps one other thing that is worth noting is that Joseph finds favor in the eyes of his master in verse 4. Vayisharet oto, he serves him. Perhaps what's pleasing is the idea that Joseph is the quintessential servant, a servant who then becomes a master. And in verse 5 we see how when he is appointed to be in charge of everything, God blesses the house of the Egyptian. And it emphasizes in everything that exists in this house, there is a blessing. And then when we get to verse 7, we are told, he leaves everything in the hands of Joseph, except for one thing, the bread that he eats. The bread that he eats, Rashi comments, is a euphemism for his wife. That is off limits to Joseph. And in that way, it is clear, Potiphar is the master, Joseph is the servant. What has happened here? Joseph was sold into slavery. Let us try to imagine how Joseph felt. Joseph, who was a 17-year-old boy. Joseph, who was almost killed by his brothers. Who was sold into slavery by his brothers. Who now finds himself in an alien environment. One might even say to a certain extent, a hostile environment. An environment whose value system is diametrically opposed to his own. And yet what seems to be is that it is in this context that Joseph cultivates a relationship with God. And that relationship is reciprocal. And that not only that, but Joseph is somehow able to bring that relationship to the awareness of his Egyptian ruler. To the point where Joseph, whose whole world fell apart, Joseph, who was a slave, all of a sudden becomes a man, a ruler, in the house of his Egyptian lord. But as we noted, perhaps the Torah is alluding to the fact of this bread which the master eats, which he holds back from Joseph. And in the end of the verse we're told, verse 6, and Joseph was very beautiful in terms of his form, in terms of his appearance. Now we know that this description is also used for his mother, Rachel. The question is, why all of a sudden are we told that? And Rashi brings up a rabbinic comment which says that the moment Joseph became very, very successful, he became a little bit carried away. He began to be concerned about his looks. One might even say he became or began to become assimilated in Egyptian society, to somehow become part of that framework, perhaps to somehow forget where he came from. And perhaps, at least for the moment, this may underscore the tension that Joseph's initial response when he came down to Egypt was to turn to God, to speak about God, and God helping him to somehow survive in this alien framework in a very similar way to what God did with Jacob. And yet, as Joseph reaches the height of his success in the house of Potiphar, perhaps that success sows the seeds of corruption, of Joseph becoming caught up with the good life. And according to the rabbinic understanding, what immediately follows is verse 7, where it says, and after these events or words, and the wife of Potiphar lifts up her eyes to Joseph and says, lie with me. And in what could be called the rabbinic understanding, this is measure for measure. The same God who was with Joseph, who helped Joseph be successful in everything that he does, is now a God who is giving Joseph a different kind of feedback, who is now creating a very, very difficult test for Joseph, where Potiphar's wife tries to seduce him. She lifts up her eyes to Joseph. This expression is very, very charged. Generally, lifting up one's eyes has to do with a revelation. What is the revelation that she sees here? What is the perception that she sees here? That ultimately she desires Joseph rather than her husband? Or perhaps even more than that, that maybe in fact Joseph is capable of being seduced, because after all, Joseph has become taken in by the good life in Egypt. And when we look at verse 8, and we look at Joseph, the first word is Vayima'ein, he refused. But for all those who know the Torah trope, Vayima'ein, according to the way we read the Torah, and the rabbis who explain the Torah through the notes that we read, Joseph did not exactly refuse. Joseph vacillated. Yes, he refused, but in the refusal, it was clear that maybe there was an opening, a crack, which would allow Mrs. Potiphar to be able to get her way. What does Joseph say to her? He says, how can I do such a thing? And he tells her, here I am. I have become so successful. I have become the ruler of the house. You are the only thing that is withheld from me. And how can I do such an evil thing? And I will sin to God. There are two elements to what Joseph says to her. The first thing is a betrayal of trust. Here his master appointed him over the household. One thing he held back. How could he betray such trust? He had so much going for him. How could he somehow forfeit it for desire? When I read this verse, I see this verse on a certain level as being an inversion of what we have in the Garden of Eden. God had told Adam and Eve, you can eat of all the trees except for one. Eating from that one tree is a betrayal. Here is God who has basically given them everything. How can they lose all that? How can they act in such a treacherous way? And here is Joseph who's in fact saying exactly that, those words to Mrs. Potiphar. But beyond that, he says, V'chatati l'Elohim. and I will have sinned to God. Not only would this be a sin against Potiphar, but this would be a sin against Joseph's whole value system, of his morality. And let us go to verse 10. As we see, Mrs. Potiphar is extremely persistent. She speaks to Joseph day. He does not listen to her, to lie with her, to be with her. It is not just a one-time thing. This is an ongoing discussion which is happening. And Mrs. Potiphar is very, very seductive by saying to Joseph, "So you don't have to sleep with me. Just be with me. Don't have sexual intercourse. Have other forms of intimacy." Joseph is being put to a very, very serious test. And perhaps I should say at this point, in rabbinic literature, of all the figures that we know, Joseph is described as Yosef HaTzadik, the righteous one. And the righteousness of Joseph is reflected in his ability to withstand the temptation. And then we get to the crowning point, verse 11. "And it was on that day that he comes to the house to do his work, and no one is around from the members of the house. And there is a rabbinic comment that appears in a midrash which says, this was a day where all the men went out to celebrate the Nile. And not only that, but Mrs. Potiphar feigned being ill so that she would remain at home. And not only that, but when it says, and Joseph came on that day to do his work, there is one rabbinic opinion that says he was coming on that day to do his work rather than his master's work, which meant that the circumstances were now created so that Joseph perhaps will finally cave in, will finally allow his temptation to overcome him and have relations with Mrs. Potiphar. And then when we get to verse 12, it says, "And she grabs him by his coat and says to him, lie with me. And he leaves the coat in her hand and he runs and goes outside." This is Joseph's moment of truth. And once again, grabbing him by the coat, on a very simplistic level, she's trying to strip him of his clothing in order to be able to have sexual relations with him. But grabbing him by the coat, removing the coat in the house of Potiphar has a symbolic meaning. It is Joseph's status, just as it was in the house of Yaakov. When she takes his coat, she is stripping him of that status. And Joseph leaves the coat. What's important for us is, in the end, he didn't just let her take the coat and then have a relationship with her. He leaves the coat and he runs away. It seems to be that the days of Joseph in the house of Potiphar have come to an end. Joseph cannot continue there. He can no longer play that role. A line has been crossed. But I would like to bring up a rabbinic comment which asks the question, what was it that stopped Joseph from taking his temptation to the end? What was it that at the very last moment pushed him to run away, go outside? And once again, the imagery going outside is not just physical, but going outside is leaving a certain reality which he cannot be part of. And the answer that's given by the rabbis is, Joseph saw the image of his father. Joseph saw his father, and perhaps when he saw the image of his father, he remembered his identity. He remembered where he really belongs, what his place is. Joseph, who came down to Egypt, who when he came down to Egypt, could have very easily abandoned his father's house, could have very easily abandoned his father's belief system, and could have said, here is the opportunity for me to now carve out a new life and become an Egyptian. Did not do that. Yet nevertheless, we find that Joseph has a constant struggle between always being part of his father's home, his father's tradition, and between the reality that he's experiencing, which is so tempting, which is so diametrically opposed to everything that his father believes in. And in the moment of truth, Joseph goes out. He makes a decision that ultimately he is part of his father's household. He cannot cross this line. And this is Yosef HaTzadik, Joseph, the righteous individual. This Saturday night, Motzai Shabbat, we will be lighting the first candle of Hanukkah. On Hanukkah, we celebrate the victory of the Maccabees. Maimonides, in his famous code, the Mishneh Torah, highlights the significance of the victory of the Maccabees was the restoration of Jewish sovereignty for over 200 years. And in fact, in the modern state of Israel, certainly in the early years, the Zionists, secular Zionists, saw themselves as being the modern-day Maccabees, the few against the many, the weak against the mighty, who overcame them and ultimately succeeded in setting up a sovereign state. But there is another aspect of Hanukkah, which we are all familiar with. Every day of Hanukkah, we light the Chanukiah. Lighting the Chanukiah commemorates the miracle of the oil in the victory of the Maccabees. According to a rabbinic tradition, the Maccabees, when they achieved their victory, entered the temple, found it defiled, cleansed it, wanted to light the menorah, searched for a pure cruse of oil, found only one, insisted on using only pure oil. And that jar of oil should have lasted for only one day, but miraculously it lasted for 8 days. And to commemorate that miracle, 8 days, we light candles, increasing every day, as the opinion of Beit Hillel. The victory of the Maccabees was not only a victory for Jewish sovereignty. The victory of the Maccabees was also a victory of rebuilding the temple, first and foremost. And not just rebuilding a temple, rebuilding a pure temple. It was a religious victory. It was a victory of Jews who had been persecuted, of Jews who had been encouraged to assimilate, who basically reaffirmed their relationship with Jewish tradition. It is not coincidental that the holiday of Hanukkah always comes out when we read the story of Joseph and his brothers. And in particular, I would like to speak about the story of Joseph. Joseph's story is of a young lad who was sold into slavery in a foreign environment, who has to make a very, very serious choice as to whether he will remain true to his tradition, to his heritage, to his Jewish identity, or whether he will assimilate into the dominant culture. And in the story in our parsha, Joseph very clearly makes the decision to be true to his Jewish tradition. Joseph makes the decision to be true to his God. And as we continue to read in the story of Joseph, his relationship with God becomes more and more transparent. And eventually in next week's parsha, when he is brought before Pharaoh, and Pharaoh is astounded by his wisdom and insight, Joseph says straight out, "It is not me, it is God. Everything that I do is in service of God." This perhaps should be for us the message of Hanukkah. We live in a world where it is very easy for us to become assimilated, and perhaps I would add to assimilate values which are inimical to Judaism. If I just cite the example that we discussed today, adultery, I would be willing to say that perhaps in the culture at large, adultery is something which is tolerated, is not necessarily resoundingly condemned. And yet from a Jewish perspective, it is totally unacceptable. It is treacherous, a sin against man and a sin against God. And perhaps Hanukkah is a holiday where we need to ask ourselves, to what degree are we still committed to our Jewish tradition? To what degree have we allowed ourselves to become assimilated or to assimilate values which are foreign to who we should be? Hanukkah is a time for cleansing. Hanukkah is a time for bringing light and clarity in the midst of darkness. Hanukkah is a time where perhaps we should reaffirm our commitment to study, to understanding, and through that study and understanding, see more clearly what God wants of us and how we can continue our Jewish tradition. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.